cosmology, we could maybe put it there, I'm not sure. But put it there for now. Or make it an episode of TH, actually. So what is the brain actually doing? I think I already have a production going on in that topic. Well, it's clear that some kind of electric activity or we could say some kind of energetic activity goes on in the brain. Triggered by and triggering the activities of the bodily senses. The brain is a control central for the nervous system. Motor system of the body. Other mental activity also apparently show in the brain activity, which we can measure in terms of electromagnetic energy. Flow blood flow and so on. But then there are claims that consciousness, that the mind itself and even consciousness the observer self was the perceiver of the both physical and mental activity is is also but the effects of such electromagnetic activity. And they claim to be able to locate just about every property of us including love and spirituality, to the effects of such electric activity in certain specific regions of the brain. In fact, thank you. although some claim slightly successful attempts at crudely decoding for instance how an image seen by the eyes give rise to certain patterns in the visual cortex and back of the head. Back of the brain. Or that could be moved actually, because it doesn't belong here. It could be more about this description, what the brain does. Yet, there has been no successful attempt at even explaining by a theoretical viable model how such information could be encoded in the neurons and synapses of the brain. Such as can be easily described for the workings of a computer. No system of bits and bytes have been discovered. In fact, the electric activity of a brain cell is rather than working some neat off and on switches, a seemingly random play or chaotic maybe. Turbulence of multiple electric outbursts. Where no binary or similar information could conceivably be stored. This has led some neurology researchers to explore theories that the information used by the brain or the information of the brain is rather present in the electromagnetic field itself that is generated by the brain activity. a bit similar to the way that information in a hologram can be stored in the pattern of light wave interference. But the real problem appears when trying to confine us the conscious observers of both the activity of the brain, mind and senses to be nothing but an effect of the brain activity. Well, most sincere scientists are now agreeing that there is no scientific foundation for such an idea. On the contrary, people such as John Searles, maybe Penrose, I don't remember, of Searles with his Chinese room example. Mm. have clearly shown that such an assumption of consciousness being a product of the activity of the brain cells is irrational. But, well, while the holonomic or holographic theory of the brain, most notably propounded by physicist David Bohm and what was the name of the other guy? Anyway, look it up. Which you can study on your own. Here and here, links down there. The question still remains, how such a holographic field created by electrochemical reactions only could give rise to a unified singular identity of a conscious human being. But this is now getting boring, and I probably lost a few viewers because it's getting a little too dry scientific here, but some are interested in that level and probably know much more than me about that level, so I need to try to anchor it there too a little bit now and then. But let's go back to our reality here and now, and the question, what do we know about the brain? And I don't think they know much more than that when it comes to the brain in relation to the mind and, well, the soul, actually, because the word soul includes it all, right? In India, they have the expression Atma, which really means the self. Who really is that conscious observer, as the quantum physicists and others talk about now? And there they describe the mind as manasa. A subtle energy body, quote unquote, which is really where most activities are going on, a screen. Where, upon which we now, for example, see what we see. I'm in a room now, and I see furniture, windows, and so on. But what I'm actually seeing is an image in my mind. Created by the input from two little cameras in my skull. So, that's probably why several the very fathers of quantum physics developed a great interest in the Indian knowledge. Vedanta. I think what really happened there was that they said, it doesn't work to try and explain all of existence, including us. Only in terms of physical matter. Lifeless, impersonal matter. And there is no need to, as modern physicalist science has done, try to eliminate the mind. You just can't do it, except maybe by convincing yourself through endless, painstaking word jugglery. It could maybe anyway be possible, however improbable, given long enough time and so on. A Oxford philosopher David Chalmers says, suggests that there are already several so-called fundamentals in nature which we really do not know what they are, such as gravity and electromagnetism. But they are anyway included. As fundamentals of nature, simply based on their obvious and self-evident presence in this nature. So, consciousness being the same, the mind being even more conspicuously present in nature, since everything else we experience of nature is going on in our minds. So, Chalmers suggests the mind could very reasonably be included as one of the fundamentals in nature. And it wouldn't break any science. Anyway, he speaks about that here at link. In case you want to look. But what I really wanted to talk about here today is how could a plausible theory for what the brain actually is there for and what it actually does look like. Now, whether holographic or not, this or that, I think we can agree that the brain reflects both the activity of the senses, both the input and the output senses, and that of the mind. Now, what I have seen, and I don't claim to be an expert here, so please fill me in the comments here if you find there's more to add to it. That they can locate to certain parts of the brain certain emotional activity. And of course, such activity also affects the glands that excrete hormones, such as adrenaline, dopamine, and so on. And that we can take chemicals and that we can affect the brain with chemicals that give rise to as it seems certain experiences. Or rather, they seem to let such experiences through by inhibiting and blocking certain functions of their neurons. Interestingly, some neurologists claim that religiosity is a result of a blocked or hampered activity in the some part of their brain, I forgot which. Now, whether that is true or not is one thing, but think about that for a while. Could it then be that the brain, rather than creating such feelings and thoughts and experiences, is somehow or other blocking them. For instance, when you take an opiate, it makes you feel very good. Removing pain. But it does it by blocking out and shutting out and turning down the functions there in the brain cell, nerve cell that give rise to the pain experience in the first place. So, given then that there is a mind which we already dealt with, because your mind exists, doesn't it? That's what you're using now to understand this. And you are there behind it all as a conscious observer, right? Then it appears that the brain interfacing with the rest of the body conditions our minds capturing the attention of the mind, so to speak, and pulling it in to experience what the body experiences. So when that signal substance comes entering into the brain cell, or whatever it is, it can be some electrochemical activity, saying pain, that feeling and experience of pain appear there in our mind and to us, who by nature do not experience pain. But rather some kind of pleasurable, or at least neutral state. William James still, I think, considered the grandfather of modern psychology and a very influential person in Western psychology. Who seem to have followed the mainstream brain generates mind paradigm that had become influential even in the, well, when did it start becoming influential? Late 19th century or early something like that. He wrote later in his life and suggested that the brain, rather than generating the mind, acts as a filter for the mind, which is transcendent to the brain, existing beyond the brain, and is actually brilliant. And when even such an influential and prominent and serious scientist suggests such a possibility, then, well, we can do so too, and that's what we are doing here. With our theory, and that many do today, I would say that this is a great paradigm shift that should have happened 100 years ago. And that is inevitably happening, although many are resisting and even fighting it. Hardcore physicalist, materialist. Still occupy powerful positions in the academic world. But picture this as a plausible model that the effects we see in the brain, the little discharges there when we see something or feel something and so on, are just that, effects of an activity rather than the cause of an activity. That the brain is an interface between the body and its senses and the mind. And what we see there as electromagnetic activity is simply a sign of that. The mind is focused into the body and its senses through the brain. And thus, there is an energy exchange there. It can be likened a bit to a player plugged into or connected to a VR game through some interface, goggles, controllers, gloves. Earphones, microphones, so on. The brain would then be the interface between us and our mind, and the body with its senses. it is clear that it is an extremely sophisticated interface far beyond and different from our crude binary computers. But since it is rather channeling information rather than generating it, we even, strictly scientifically, get rid of a huge burden of proof, namely how the brain can generate all the fantastic and metaphysical properties of the mind and soul and self. The brain then is just what it seems to be, a gray lump connected to a system of wires that control the body. And receive input from the senses. And somehow or other, coding, quote unquote, that information providing a screen that the mind can interact with. In any case, we are here faced with two theories of which one is plagued with insurmountable problems of even creating a crude theoretical working model, what to speak of providing conclusive evidence and proof, and the other one fairly straightforward and simple, only requiring one, essentially one single thing, the acceptance of the mind as a fundamental in nature. And of course, of us conscious observers. Yeah. Well, you are welcome to tell us your own take on this issue in the comments here, or roll your own video and let's dig deeper into these topics that are really the most important, because it's about our life, right? Anyway, thank you so much.